This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is employment law, focusing on age discrimination in the hiring and termination of employees. This is a real problem, I think some of you may have been confronted with. Our guests are employee attorney Dan Corman, a senior attorney at the AARP Foundation in Washington, D.C., and management attorney Philip Ikenna Person, an attorney with Greenberg, Torrig, and International Law Firm, the San Francisco office. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Also, I want all of you to know, this is we're doing this program live, by the way, on Wednesday evening, December 27th, and it's also our monthly Call a Lawyer night. If you're not familiar with it, you'll have a chance to talk to attorneys off the air while my guests and I are doing the live program, live call-in program. You'll have a chance to talk with attorneys off the air. You might want to jot down this number, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And here at KLW Public Radio in San Francisco, for family law is Janet Frankel, a certified specialist. For workers' compensation law, Robert Wyman, a certified specialist. And estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified specialist John Martin. You want to jot down his number. He'll be available at this other number until 8 this evening. That's 650-430-4664, 650-430-4664. I am hoping our employment law attorney, Michael Nelson, will be here. And also here at the station is, for tax law, real estate law, he's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. Now, for those of you who are still being chased by creditors, on Friday, December 29th, from 9 a.m. to noon, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk to you at 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. This is a public service that these attorneys are doing. Most of them, actually all the people I've mentioned, have done this before. They're very gracious with their time. There's no obligation on your point. As I say, this is a public service. So take advantage of it if you'd like. And a little bit later in the program, we'll be taking your calls on employment law. So you might want to jot down our toll-free number for the on-air program. That's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And Dan, let me welcome you to the program. I've been doing all the talking myself, and I know you have plenty to say. Are you there?
I am. How you doing, Tom?
Hey, you sound good. You sound good in Washington, D.C. I'm doing fine, Dan. Thank you. And Philip?
Well, it's a little chilly here, but I'm honored to be on your show and hope we can provide your listeners.
Well, I do, too. And Philip, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here. Not as cold as D.C., but it's...
Oh, boy, it's cold
it's
here.
It's pretty cold over
it's
here.
It's cold here. Would you, Philip, would you start with this, some of the things, kind of brief on age discrimination, if you would, that
sure.
You're going to start the program with?
Sure. The first thing we need to know is, what is the protected class? And that is anyone who's 40 years or older. A lot of my clients say, hey, that's a bit young, especially...
It is a bit. It is.
But that's the protected class, 40 and older. And there's different types of protections you have under the law. The first one that comes to mind is disparate treatment. That's what most people think of when they think of discrimination. It's the intentional discrimination. It's where, but for my age, me being over the age of 40, I wouldn't have had this adverse employment action, whether mm-hmm. it's a termination, they didn't hire me, a demotion, or whatever the case may be. The second class of protection that you typically see is disparate impact. It's a little bit different. It's when it's facially neutral. There is no issue of they're intentionally discriminating against me, but there is a specific test, policy, procedure, or practice that has a disproportionate impact to people who are over the age of 40.
Can you give us a simple example of what you mean by that, disproportionate impact?
Sure. If I have a policy that says I only want this position to be filled by, or a practice that I only want this position to be filled by people who are recent college graduates.
Yeah.
I'm not purposely thinking, hey, I don't want anybody who's over the age of 40.
Yeah.
But it could be an impact that's negatively affecting people who are over the age of 40 because most college graduates are over that age.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a disparate impact. And there's other different things in policy that could affect that group.
You know, Chuck, this is Dan. It's this second category is what we call, other than sort of smoking gun evidence.
Mm.
Everyone knows the situation where an employer, one of the bad ones, not probably anyone who Philip represents, but
we hope not anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, just can't abide, or someone in management can't abide folks with gray hair, or women who they somehow think, you know, ought to be a grandma and at home, and they just say things about the person being older. And that is the kind of thing that's a little easier to recognize, and you see in complaints. One thing that's interesting about California is California has about a quarter of all the federal complaints of discrimination. Those are age discrimination. That's a lot more than in other parts of the country. But the harder thing that you were describing, Philip, that disparate impact, boy, that's a tangle of legal mumbo-jumbo. But another example that AARP has gotten into challenging is companies that have really rigid requirements for, say, the numbers of years of experience in order to qualify for a job. it's a fairly typical thing to say, you know, we're thinking of this job as the kind of job that involves experience of X to YZ numbers of years of experience. But if you say the maximum number of years you can have if you want to apply is 7, say, and we have a case like that in Chicago, well, that's going to cut out almost everyone over 40. So that's another example that doesn't say age explicitly, but it might as well say age.
And Dan's correct there. One thing I do want to add on to that scenario that Dan brought up, he's perfectly right here. He's on the head. That is a neutral policy that may impact people who are above the age of 40 differently than others. But one thing that we will probably talk about later is that you also, as an employer, have certain defenses where if there's a legitimate reason, you need to have a cutoff, whether it's because we have certain level of management employees and we need a subordinate. So most of the time, you're not going to have that subordinate have more years of experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's some of the responses that you may hear from an employer, and it all depends on the facts of the situation. So I agree.
Yeah. So it's interesting how the facts really can affect things, both when you're talking about what has an effect, might have an effect on older workers, and also the intent. One thing that's really interesting about federal and state law is that in California, you have particularly strong civil rights laws. And Philip, I know, is probably a little more expert on California civil rights law, but I've litigated some cases under the Fair Employment and Housing Act, the FEHA, and under that law, as opposed to federal law, you're not really allowed to ask an employee until you give them a tentative offer of employment what their age is.
Mm.
Under the federal law, it sure raises eyebrows, but it is not per se illegal to ask for an employee's age before you make them a job offer.
How interesting.
California law really has some powerful protections for workers.
Well, what do you think, Dan? You mentioned that the federal employment discrimination cases, 25% of them in the United States are in California, if I heard you correctly.
Well, actually, Chuck, it's not that many. It's so across the country.
Yeah.
Age discrimination is a problem.
Yeah.
But it varies state by state by how old the population is. And although you don't think of California as a older population, for a variety of reasons, fully one quarter of all the complaints to the federal authorities about civil rights in employment, one quarter of those complaints are age discrimination. So age discrimination is a big challenge in California, at least under the federal law. Does that make sense?
It does.
So it's not quite that much in other parts of the country. So that's why I'm glad to be on your program. It's a big deal there in California.
And Dan, let me ask you this. This is Philip speaking. Could it also be that the number of employers that are in California compared to other smaller states?
Sure, it could be. It also could be that there are, you know, frankly, California just has such a dynamic economy. And I think some of the industries where age discrimination is perceived to be a problem are headquartered there. I mean, Californians are blessed with the, you know, being in the sort of the nerve center of high tech of all different kinds. But for older workers, there are lots of job opportunities, but also some challenges because, at least historically, tech industries have been the kind of industries, at least some employers, have really had a hard time embracing the fact that the workforce is getting older. So I think that there are a variety of factors, obviously. But one of them is I think that the tech industries are located there. And although they have some real blessings for the economy, they really have some challenges in terms of not always seeing older workers as desirable.
Well, let me throw something out to both of you, and that's this. What if there is, and two different scenarios, what if you have a worker who, let's say, is he or she is in their mid-50s to maybe early 60s, who feels that there is a feeling in her office that no longer is she wanted. Most of the other employees are much younger. And it finally ends up that she has, let's say, a review of her work, which is negative, and she is terminated. What can... Let's assume for the moment this is all bogus. In other words, they want to get rid of her because she's older than the kids who are the employees. What, Philip, from an employer's standpoint, what would you say the employer should do in terms of properly dealing with something like this other than having some bogus excuse?
Well, the first thing that I would tell my client is who replaced this employee?
Yeah.
This employee. Are we talking about someone who's 5 years younger, 2 years younger, or 20 years younger?
Mm-hmm.
And that may have a different analysis there. Then the next thing you have to do is anytime you get a complaint, and employees, they should understand that they do have to verbalize or go through the process of making that internal complaint. They should do that to give the...
In writing.
Correct.
In writing, yes.
To give the employer the opportunity to investigate, to do a full and fair investigation of that matter.
Yeah.
To ask who... they need to ask, talk to who they need to talk to, interview who they need to interview, and do a full investigation and see if there's anything to that, any credence to her feelings. After that, she'll usually get a written report or some sort of feedback from the employer saying, mm-hmm. we investigated and this is what we found.
Mm-hmm.
From there, it depends on the investigation. She and Dan will surely touch on this more than I will. She'll have to go through the appropriate administrative agency if she still feels that there was some sort of discrimination.
Is that the Fair Employment and Housing Act in California?
In California and in the federal arena. It's the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, EEOC.
EEOC,
correct.
Yeah.
And start her process that way. The administrative agency is the next step after that. Anything else you want to add on that, Dan?
Well, no, just a tweak or two. You did a great job, Philip. It's an example of what a set of hoops it can be for someone who has a case of discrimination. And we really admire people who are willing to stick up for their rights, but it can really be an exhausting and a daunting process. And sometimes, frankly, there are people who reach a conclusion that, you know, they just need to get on with their lives and not think about going to court. But for those people who are either especially determined or especially offended, there are some real things for them to take very seriously that Philip mentioned. For instance, it's real important, however frustrating it might be, for employees who think they have suffered some discrimination to pay attention to what their employer has provided by way of complaint mechanisms. In other words, if you've got an internal process at the company, you may be a little dubious about whether the company is really going to do all they can do to protect your job. But boy, oh boy, if you don't use that internal process, you may find down the line that you're out of luck, because the employer is going to say, and the courts have said reasonably so, you should have given us a chance to correct the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to know what your internal complaint procedures are and use them, even if you're not convinced it's going to work. And then later on, you have to pay attention to the fact that Congress has determined under federal law, and the state legislature in California has determined under state law, that employers deserve the benefit of being able to move on with their lives if employees don't complain in a certain time period.
So you can't wait for years and years.
Under federal law, it's usually 300 days,
mm-hmm.
which is not a lot of time. So you got to act quickly, which means that if you really think you have a case, use the internal procedures and contact a lawyer, perhaps, to find out what requirements are, or you can go online. I'm sure the California state of California has websites, but, you know, the EEOC.gov is the place to go to find out what the very basic rules are.
And that would be, though, under the federal law.
The federal law, which, by the way, is the Age Discrimination in Employment Act,
yes,
ADEA, which is just about a week ago celebrated its 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is Philip here. On the California side, as we touched on, the California equivalent would be the Fair Employment and Housing Act, commonly known as FEHA. And you talked about the time frame on which they should exhaust those administrative remedies, go to that administrative agency, the DFEH. And in California, it's 1 year from mm-hmm. the actual unlawful conduct.
Mm-hmm.
So whether we're talking about a demotion, a termination, a failure to hire, you have 1 year to file that complaint with the Department of Fair Employment Housing.
Now, there is, if someone, as the example that we have used on this, someone who is terminated because he or she is in his or her 50s or early 60s, to file a complaint in California with the Fair Employment and Housing Act Commission within 1 year that we're talking about, there is no basic charge for an employee for that kind of process with the FEHA, is there, Philip? There's no charge for, let's say, a lawyer or anything like that. This is the FEHA would investigate itself, and if it finds there's been some violation, it would proceed with some kind of hearing, would it not?
And that's a good point to bring up, is that you can go to the DFEH and file your charge with them.
Yeah.
And they can investigate and represent you, your rights there. Or you could also ask for a right to sue letter, which is saying, hey, yeah, I want to go straight to court with this. Let me get that right to sue notice. But once you get that right to sue notice, you have 1 year to file your complaint in court.
Let me come back to that in just a moment, because I want to follow that up, because I think that's very important. Again, everyone, we are doing this program live on Wednesday evening, December 27th. I hope you've all been having a very fine holiday season. And I hope the year 2018 will be good for all of us, frankly. In a few minutes, I will invite you who are listening to the live program to call us to talk with my guests on the air. That toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you want to talk with one of the attorneys who's here for Call a Lawyer Night, that number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. I've told you who is here, and I'll let you know who that is again in a few minutes, but we have a certified specialist here for family law, a certified specialist here for workers' compensation law, for estate planning, trust, and probate law. The certified specialist number is 650-430-4664. I'm sorry to say that the attorney who was going to be here for employment law, apparently there was some miscommunication. He is not here. We have also an attorney here for tax law, real estate law. He's also a real estate broker. And then on Friday, December 29th, from 9 a.m. to noon, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be happy to talk with you. No obligation on your part whatsoever. He has been doing this for years. He's very gracious with his time. He's a very experienced bankruptcy attorney. His number is 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. And for those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, let me tell you who's here for the program. Management attorney Philip Ikena Person, who is with the international law firm of Greenberg Torg. And in Washington, D.C., believe it or not, we are stretching out. And we have employee attorney Dan Corman, who's a senior attorney at the AARP Foundation in Washington, D.C. Now, let me come back to what I wanted to ask both of you. Let's say that this man or this woman who has been terminated decides to file a claim with the FEHA and says, I want a right to sue letter, gets the right to sue letter, and is about ready to proceed with hiring an attorney. What generally in California, Philip, can you tell us, what would be the charge for this, or are employment attorneys taking these on contingent fee agreements?
It depends. Some are taking them on contingency fee agreements where it could be a third of whatever you would collect,
uh-huh,
and it would raise a little bit if you go to trial.
Uh-huh.
So it truly depends. But under FEHA and also under other statutes, you could get attorney's fees if you eventually win this case, or that can be discussed when you're settling the case.
I see.
That's one of the benefits about the statute from the employee standpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
From the employer's standpoint, you always have to factor that in before we get to any litigation or settlement that attorney's fees may be an issue.
Dan, let me ask you this. Your office is based in Washington, D.C., and yet you've had cases here in California. How is that? And how what does AARP, I mean, I presume that when you represent someone in some type of an age discrimination case, AARP is not charging the employee for your representation, or am I wrong?
No, you're right, Chuck. And you were right to point out that at least at the administrative stage, whether it's under FEHA or federal law, state agency or federal, it costs an employee or a former employee nothing to file a charge of discrimination. And unless they do that, they won't get a chance to figure out perhaps how strong their claim is and to preserve a right down the road if they decide they're really committed to it, to find an attorney willing to represent them. Now, most attorneys representing plaintiffs, the good news is that they mostly do so largely without upfront charges, although there are some charges perhaps to assist with filing fees and the like. It is mostly the case that, as Philip said, an employee who is suing their employer or former employer pays their attorney if they win their case. And if they don't win their case, the attorney essentially doesn't get paid, all but a pittance perhaps for some of the expenses. Mm-hmm. So that's the good news. The tougher news is that naturally plaintiff's attorneys are looking for the best cases, and some employees who do feel like they have very good cases and they may have been unfairly treated find it hard to find an attorney. We partner with private attorneys.
I see.
And therefore make it more feasible to bring the really tough cases. For instance, we bring some cases against state governments,
which
under federal law, for constitutional reasons, you can't get any money from a state employer under the age discrimination laws for back pay or damages if they've been discriminated against. So what we do is make the case possible by helping out private attorneys to bring that kind of case. In California, we brought cases because, a case that's a big deal in California is a big deal nationally, but also because, like I said before, there are some tech industries that are located in California, and we have, and also, I would say, the entertainment industry. Those are two industries where older workers have really had some problems. So we were involved in a case a number of years back against a number of TV networks, movie studios, talent agencies, which discriminated against older writers. All those cases settled pretty favorably. And we've had a case against a hard drive manufacturer. We've had facilities in California. And now we're in a case in San Francisco federal court against PricewaterhouseCoopers, accounting and consulting firm, which, like a lot of professional employers, tends to hire many, if not all, of its employees, at least at the entry and lower levels, right out of college or professional school.
Yeah.
And we have a case against PwC where they found a really talented 50-year-old accountant, and they liked his qualifications enough to invite him in for an interview, but then asked him while he was walking through the office, "Do you think you could work for a younger manager?" Which made it pretty clear that they thought, you know, his age was, as they say, not a good fit. So we think that's the problem, and that was another reason we came out to California.
Well, what, if you would, because this is very interesting, this older person who was applying, what happened, or is that the subject of the lawsuit right now?
That is the subject of the lawsuit. The
they did not offer him.
Waterhouse, like a lot of these consulting and accounting firms, they do a lot of recruiting on campus, and they do a lot of recruiting online for folks right out of school, which can include a very few older workers. But our strong understanding, based on this fellow Steve Rabin's case and other, you know, evidence that is emerging, is that they almost exclusively recruit younger workers, and are very exclusionary when it comes to very highly qualified older workers. And that's a pity. I mean, they're losing out, you know, their clients are losing out. And, you know, it's from these stereotypical views that I was just describing, that somehow older workers don't fit. in certain workplaces.
Dan,
the
let
fact
me...
of it is that older workers are used to having younger bosses, and they do just fine under them.
Let me ask you this, Dan. Is the subject
sure.
of your lawsuit here in the federal court in San Francisco, is that you, AARP, and the apparently private attorney are challenging that this older worker is not being treated fairly in terms of that the company really is only interested in younger workers? Is that a violation of the federal at least of the federal law? Is that your position?
Our position is it's a violation not only of federal law but state law.
I see.
So we're going under both. And we're also arguing that this is a systemic practice. Yeah. And this is the kind of case that AARP gets involved in. We try to really get in cases that have a big impact. We're saying that PwC, and like I say, they're not probably alone in this, but they're the ones we've gone after because of this case, that they have a pattern and practice across the company of recruiting for entry level and positions right above entry level as well, virtually exclusively people right out of school,
mm-hmm.
and that has the intention and the effect under both of the theories Philip was outlining before of treating older workers unfairly.
Boy,
that
oh
is,
boy!
It, yeah,
oh.
That's it.
And Dan,
yeah.
if I could hop on. That.
Sure.
Let me interrupt just for a moment, if you don't mind. I want to invite the listeners now, if you have questions about age discrimination or if you have questions about other areas of employment law, please join us with your calls. Right now it's in California, 7:32 p.m. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And let me make a couple of announcements before Philip continues. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar Association, here's a number you might want to jot down, 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That number is 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. I let you know about this because, frankly, this is a marvelous opportunity for you if you have a legal problem. Wherever you are in California, with a couple of exceptions, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find a qualified, experienced attorney to meet with you for half an hour. And again, with minor exception, you will be charged anywhere between $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going as a really fine public service. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization, the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Trusts and Estates Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And if you are looking for any of the certified legal specialists through the California Board of Legal Specialization, that's 11 areas of law in California, you might want to take a look at the website www.calbar.ca.gov and go to the upper left corner of your screen to legal specialists. Click that on, click on your county, and look for the specialty that you're interested in. If nationwide you are looking for a specialist who's with a specialization from the National Board of Trial Advocacy, that's four legal areas. go to the website www.nbtalawyers.org. nbtalawyers.org. Now, my guests are, in case any of you have come in just a little bit late, we have some very experienced attorneys here on the program, and I hope those of you who are listening to the live program take advantage of this. Our employee attorney is Dan Corman, a senior attorney at the AARP Foundation in Washington, D.C., and with me here in the studio at KALW Public Radio in San Francisco is management attorney Philip Ikenna Person, P-E-R-S-O-N. He's with the Greenberg Torg Law Firm, which is an international law firm, the San Francisco office. Now, before I so rudely interrupted you, Philip, you were going to say something.
No, you had important comments. One thing that we should point out for the listeners, which Dan kind of alluded to, was there's the federal statute and there's the state statute. There's often a lot of overlap there, but there are some situations where, in my opinion, the state statute offers more protection for employees. And that's something both employers and employees should know. One of the areas is, Dan mentioned this, that you can, as an employer, you cannot ask during the interview non-job-related inquiries through a job notice. A job notice or an interview process. The DFEH, the state agency, has a guideline on what employers can and cannot ask generally. That the title of that guideline is Employment Inquiries, What Can Employers Ask Applicants and Employees. So that's a good way to familiarize yourself with some of the off topics and the off issues that you cannot ask. The other thing that both employers and employees should know is that under the state statute, the manager or supervisor can be personally liable for harassment, meaning not only can you sue the employer, you can also sue the manager, which usually falls under the same insurance umbrella anyway.
Yeah.
But, and that's just for harassment, now, does not that for mean, discrimination.
Does that mean, for example, if the manager of a unit also has people below him, him or her, who is kind of monitoring other employees, can that middle-level person underneath the manager also be sued personally?
It depends. If they had control and oversight and actually did supervise and was the person who's harassing.
I see. Okay.
And just so we don't conflate the two, there's a difference between harassment and discrimination. Discrimination is what we've been talking about for the most part, the disparate impact, disparate treatment that we spoke about. Harassment is any time you have a verbal or physical conduct that's unwelcome. Yeah. So if I make comments about you, there may not be any adverse employment action. I didn't demote you or anything else. And it has to rise to a level where it's actually severe and what we call creates a hostile work environment, then that could be harassment.
I see.
And that's where the supervisor or manager could be liable.
I see, for not stopping it, for not stopping that type of thing.
And also the state statute also has a failure to prevent. From the employer standpoint, it's very important that you train your supervisors and managers and to make sure that they keep up with those trainings and you document those trainings.
Mm-hmm.
Because if not, you could be, and a situation comes up, there could be a failure to prevent the harassment, which would be a claim under FEHA.
Dan, do you have some response to what Philip was just talking about before we take our first call?
I think it's very interesting how California law is sort of on the leading edge. We have at AARP been very frustrated with the sort of limited regulation at the federal level of interview questions about age. I mean, our view of it is age is a number. It is relevant almost never to ability to do the job. Mm-hmm. And that California has figured out that, you know, that ought to make those kinds of questions unlawful at the front end until, say, you know, down the line, if you've made a job offer, you need to know someone's date of birth so you can do a, you know, background check or something like that. You know, that's one of the things that is admirable about California law, and I have a mind to recommend to my cohorts in Washington that we add that provision of California law to our proposals to fix the federal law.
Hey, let me, Dan, let me ask you this before we take our first call. Do you have in your office there, AARP, do you have a website that, that people might be able to access and kind of educate themselves on age discrimination or other aspects that AARP is involved in that might have some employment aspects to them?
We do. It's sort of a long it's a long web link.
Oh.
But if you go to www.aarp.org and ask then for in the search engine for age discrimination, there are going to be articles and there are links to our legal cases and legal advocacy.
Good.
Good. So that's the thing to do. Go to the website and start looking for age discrimination. For our legal office, you can also look for the AARP Foundation and legal advocacy, and you'll be directed toward our legal cases.
Well, very good.
There's a wealth of information on that
website. Pleased. I'm a great believer in the individual trying to educate him or herself in the law. And not just be someone who at all times relies on somebody else. I think if one starts to, if someone has a problem, a potential legal problem, I think if you can begin to do some of your own work to educate yourself, it's a great thing to do. Michelle, thanks for being so patient. Welcome to your legal rights.
Hello, can you hear me all right?
Sure can.
Okay. Well, I have maybe two questions or maybe a thought and a question.
Sure, go ahead.
And the thought, maybe half a question, is that the legal remedies for everything are always kind of limiting, right? It's what you can do in the court or in the settlement or in the EEOC or whatever. I'd like to know if there are good resources for people who are suffering the extremely painful experience of harassment at work or of terrible stress at work that they're trying to assess, is this discrimination, is it not discrimination? Resources for dealing with that both emotionally and also for identifying what it is. And, you know, is this age discrimination or am I just not doing my job, or is it really just not a good fit, or whatever.
So you want to find out, is there some office or some organization you can go to try to get some direction based upon what you're confronted with to see if there is something that you can do about this? Is that right?
This is not a personal question.
No, that's all right.
It's more of a general question.
I got
yes,
you.
It would be not so much an office, but even literature. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a rising awareness of what sexual harassment and sexual
discrimination
at work is.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
And I think that there's a much lower level. It seems to me that age discrimination and age related job harassment and so forth hasn't gotten there to the point where it's easy for people to, I'm sure that many people feel that they are being discriminated against in ways that have to do with their age.
Well,
but let me shorten that and be done with that. And the other question really is whether your people are willing or able to comment on discrimination in faculty hiring. Particularly, I'm thinking of, as you know, demographically, university faculties, we have a lot of older tenure faculty, and then there was a generation that mostly ended up being lecturers and working in much less secure and more poorly paid and less supported positions. And one of the things that I have seen is enormous discrimination against lecturers when they apply for Senate faculty jobs. And I believe that universities, or at least the university that I'm familiar with, which is the University of California, goes very directly to people who are directly coming out of school, and really strongly discriminates against people who are often far more qualified and a good deal older. And so the question is, does that seem like an age discrimination issue or not? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, terrific, Michelle. Thank you very much for calling. Philip, let's start with you, if you would.
Sure. As to the first question, where she could go, there's different legal clinics and different legal organizations that will be able to advise her and tell her, you know, hey, are you far off base here, or is there a legitimate place?
How can she find them, though, practically speaking?
Practically speaking, the California Bar Association does list some of those legal clinics. You can even Google legal clinics in the Bay Area, and there's plenty of them that come off.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that do employment law on the plaintiff's side. The other thing which we talked about that is required is to give the employer an opportunity to remedy the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some employees may be cynical about it, saying this employer doesn't care or is clearly discriminating, but when we usually advise our clients is that you have to have somebody who's removed from the line of management do the investigation. So go to HR. You don't have to go to your direct supervisor, but you can go to somebody who will do, and they have to, under the law, do a full and fair investigation. And a lot of times, it's an external investigator who will tell you yes or no, this is discrimination here, this is harassment.
When you go to HR, is part of the corporation or the company involved, but when you say an external investigator, is that not an investigator who's part of HR?
No. Oh. Sometimes they'll do an internal investigator. Sometimes the company will hire a neutral third party to conduct an investigation. There's been situations where the neutral will come back and say the employer was in the wrong or was in the right. And that's one way to kind of figure out if you have a claim here or if there was any credibility to the claims.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as for the university's perspective, there's one thing that you have to consider, and I'm not too familiar with the University of California, whether they're unionized or not, but if they are a unionized shop, there could also be a grievance procedure, which is under a collective bargaining agreement, just a contract between the union and the employer, where we say, if situations like this come up, what are the steps we take to this? You may have a union shop steward who will be in there with you, when you have that interview or investigation, things like that. So those are different processes to take. Dan, anything?
Yeah. I would just say that some of your listeners, Chuck, can really benefit from the fact that this is the 50th anniversary this December of the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. There really have been some in-depth articles in the national press, I think in the press in California, about older workers suffering from discrimination. I would get online and look for those, you know, age discrimination, and try to compare your experience with the experience of some people who have complained or consider complaining. I think that will give you some really good common sense guidance, and then if you're really convinced that it may be so, do some of the things that Philip suggests to find an attorney. As we said, if they are looking for good cases, and if you've got one, you're gonna probably find a good advocate.
Dan, let me.
I do think that a university, universities, public and private, actually have an age discrimination problem of long standing.
Uh-huh.
They fought mandatory retirement and were the last part of the American workforce that gave up mandatory retirement. And they are very prone to think that unless they hire the very youngest people, they are wasting their resources on people who won't have 40-year careers, whereas You know, in some cases, they train people, you know, and I can talk of from personal experience, you know, people who go into PhD programs get a lot of money for it, and they get out, and then they say, heck, I'll never get a job, and then they go to law school. We have seen at AARP a lot of older graduate students who, as your caller said, are tremendously well qualified, and they cannot get into graduate programs because universities don't think they'll ever get a job because they're too old, regardless of their qualifications. So between universities, high tech, and you know, the entertainment industry, I think those are some of your sectors that really have some serious issues with age discrimination.
Anything else, Philip?
No, I think Dan covered it well. That's
you know, I want, Chuck, if you don't mind, I want to just mention some other one other thing that's very interesting about the entertainment industry in California, which is a big case that AARP is involved with. That's now in the federal district court in California, and they're in Northern California. And this involves the IMDb case, which is, you know, very popular, IMDb.com, that gives you all kinds of information about TV and movies. But they also do a employment service for people looking for employment in, you know, the entertainment industry. And there's a law in California that was passed that said if you're that kind of service provider and the person you're providing services to asks to have their date of birth kept secret, that you have to take the date of birth off any website you run. So that's a big First Amendment issue that IMDb is saying they have the First Amendment right to publish the dates of birth of people they're giving employment service to who want their date of birth kept secret. And the California legislature said that might be a problem for older actresses, especially, and actors. And anyway, that's a case that's pending in federal court that people might want to watch. It's another interesting aspect of age discrimination.
Dan, let's take another call. Anna Maria, welcome.
Hi, Chuck. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
I listen to you all the time. I would like to recommend Equal Rights Advocates. That is a place where people, it's actually focused predominantly on women's equality, but a person can call there and run the facts by one of the representatives and get some guidance. So you were saying earlier that the person should look for help online. This is a definite organization. It's equalrights.org, www.equalrights.org. Phone number, I'm looking here, it's on Market Street in San Francisco, 415-621-0672. 415-621-0672. So the person, I used to work for a Fortune 500 company, and I was in management, and I was like the, you know, African-American and the woman. And so I had these poor women who were used to being treated in a low, not well, and they would come to me because, you know, I had an open door. These were people who were non-management. And I referred them all the time to this group, many, many times, because they felt that they were being mistreated in some way or the other. And I'm happy to see that it still exists. I haven't actually contacted them in a while. That's one organization.
Now, Anna Marie, let me ask you to wait just a moment. The Equal Rights Advocates office is in San Francisco.
That is correct.
It's not throughout the state of California.
No, but okay. It's... I'm sure they can steer people in the right direction.
Okay.
All right? They'll tell them how to get legal rights or send them to resources. They'll tell them they'll provide resources so the person doesn't have to flounder. And in terms of going to HR, that sounds really great, but HR is working for the company. I mean, and I know you have to go through the procedure, and you should, but I would say call one of these groups first before you do that. So you're documenting correctly, you know, dates, time, specific actions, not vagaries. And also, I think it would be good if your guests speak more clearly about harassment. You know, there's emotional harassment. There's lots of harassment that doesn't deal with gender issues. It's just power issues.
I think that will have to wait for another program, Anna Maria, Marie, because we are just about out of time, and we will do that. I assure you we will do that. And apparently, I've just gotten a message here. The UC Berkeley, regarding the University of California in Berkeley, the librarians and lecturers are union organized and representatives. So there is some union stuff there. Anne Maria, I appreciate your calling and giving us this. I'm going to give the phone number again for equal rights advocates. Certainly, if those of you who are in other parts of the state of California are listening to the program at some point, you may want to call the Equal Rights Advocates and have them give you direction of who you might contact in your own area in California. And that number again is 415-621-0672. And also, for those of you who are listening to the program, if you didn't listen at the very beginning, it is now the full hour available as a podcast free of charge, and you might want to keep this in mind at www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE. If you have problems with a subscribe, if you just go to www.kalw.org and look for the list of programs, Your Legal Rights is at the very bottom of the list because it's alphabetized. Okay. And you can hear this program again as early as tomorrow. We are nearly over at this point. Unfortunately, I want to tell you that we have about just a few seconds left of the program. And I just want all of you to know that we will do other programs on this, and so you don't need to worry about it. I want to thank you both very much for being on the program and giving this wonderful information. And Dan Corman, senior attorney at the AARP Foundation in Washington, D.C., and Philip Ikenna Person, attorney with Greenberg Targ International Law Firm, San Francisco office. Thank you both.
Thank you
very much.
It's Thank
been,
you, Chuck.
Been great
Good
to,
luck to you.
Been great to have you on the program. Thanks so much. Next time on Your Legal Rights, our topic will be undue influence and elder financial abuse. What it is, how to identify it, and what to do if undue influence and financial abuse are suspected. Our guest is Michael Hackard, a member of the Trust and Estates section of the State Bar, whose practice focuses on trusts and estates litigation. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Debbie Kennedy. Debbie, lovely to have you with us this evening. And production assistant Martin McLean. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio. And I wish you a very happy new year. I'm Chuck Finney.